So, the title of my doctoral dissertation is Timing is Everything, or Is It? Investigating Timing and Sound Interactions in the Performance of Groove-Based Microrhythm. Now, the work in this thesis was undertaken as part of a larger project called Timing and Sound in Musical Microrhythm, which is led by Professor Anna Danielson and involves researchers from various fields within the disciplines of musicology, psychology, and informatics. The main goal of the TIME project is to explore the relationship between timing and sound features in various rhythmic musical contexts, both via qualitative and quantitative methods. I was part of the quantitative methods group, or the quants, and chiefly responsible for carrying out a series of instructed timing experiments that explored the performance of microrhythm in groove-based contexts. The objective of my PhD project was to investigate how musicians use both acoustic timing and sound features to communicate different microrhythmic groove feels in performance. In most groove-based styles, although isochronicity or near isochronicity at the metrical level of the pulse is often the norm, producing synchrony between instrumental rhythmic layers in a strict, on-the-beat fashion is only one of several possible approaches for musicians when creating groove timing feels. Microrhythmic variation, or small-scale temporal asynchronies from a normative reference scheme that skirt the boundaries of canonical rhythmic categories, are commonplace in groove-based performance. And various configurations of either relatively more laid-back or behind the beat and pushed or ahead of the beat feels can be just as valid depending on several musical contextual factors. While timing is considered paramount to groove-based performance, it would not seem sufficient, however, to play a groove with simply the right timing if the types of sounds used and the manner in which they are acoustically shaped are also not right for any given instrument and style, whether in terms of loudness, duration, or timbre. This is because in the act of listening, we do not necessarily separate between different physical acoustic features, but rather perceive them more holistically. A change in a tone's loudness or duration, say, is not heard separately from a change in its timing location. In perception, then, timing and sound features appear to be intricately related, and in performance, the case is likely similar. When a musician changes one aspect of a produced rhythmic event, they are likely to change another to some degree. Precisely which timing and sound aspects are interrelated and how they change in performance is likely to vary, again, on several, depending on several different factors, some of which I have sought to investigate in this thesis. So the main research question in my dissertation is, how do temporal and sound-related features interact in the performance of simple groove-based patterns by drums, electric bass, and electric guitar, respectively? The main hypothesis was that musicians systematically manipulate sound features such as the intensity, duration, and frequency of rhythmic events in addition to onset timing location, in order to communicate different desired microrhythmic timing feels or styles, such as laid back, on the beat, and pushed. A couple of other sub-questions were posed, such as, what are the characteristic timing and sound feature interactions in these different instrumental settings? And to what extent do sound timing interactions used in performance correspond to perceptual sound timing interactions? To these, it was hypothesized that timing sound strategies are expected to be governed by the constraints of the instrument or the range of manipulable sound features, and based on perceptual studies that show that the perceived timing of a sound event is influenced by its shape or acoustic envelope, laid-back feel would be characterized by slower and longer and maybe softer and darker strokes, and pushed feel by faster and shorter and maybe louder and brighter strokes. The theoretical and empirical background of this dissertation was interdisciplinary, informed by various fields within musicology, including systematic musicology, music theory, ethnomusicology, and popular music studies, as well as psychology, including cognitive psychology and psychoacoustics, and also informatics, including signal processing and music information retrieval. Central to this dissertation were musicological theories and empirical studies of groove and microrhythm in music performance. Cognitive psychological theories of rhythm and meter were also considered, particularly those of dynamic attending and perceptual beat bins, which may explain how rhythmic irregularities are processed and tolerated by listeners. Studies of the perceptual centers, or P centers, of sounds, which posit that the rhythmic moment of a sound is dependent on various acoustic features, were also taken into account. And finally, psychophysical studies of onset asynchrony and anisochrony detection were also useful, as they provided heuristic thresholds regarding the detection of small-scale rhythmic irregularities. This dissertation is article-based, which is to say it contains a long introductory section of around 100 pages, followed by three research papers. It begins with a short introduction, followed by two background chapters related to the main themes explored in this thesis. groove, rhythm, and microrhythm in chapter 2, and timing and sound interactions in the production and perception of rhythm in chapter 3. Chapter 4 describes the experimental paradigm and methodology used in the papers, and chapter 5 provides a summary of the main findings of the papers, discussing them in relation to the research questions and highlighting their contributions to various fields. Finally, chapter 6 offers an in-depth discussion of the paper's findings in relation to the main themes of the thesis, as well as a concluding summary. Now, the main experimental paradigm used in this thesis was that of instructed timing performance. 21 professional guitarists, 21 bassists, and 22 drummers were instructed to play a simple backbeat-based groove pattern along to a metronome timing reference with three different timing feels, that of on the beat, laid back, and pushed. For the drummers, two more factors were explored, that of pattern, where a slightly more complex variation of the first pattern was included, and timing reference, where in addition to the simple woodblock metronome, they played along to instrumental backing tracks comprised of bass and guitar sounds. All of the experiments had a within-subjects design, whereby each participant performed all the instructed conditions per experiment. Participants were provided the same instrumental setup in order to ensure that any differences in produced timing and sound features would be primarily the result of intentional strategies, rather than the result of differences in instrument design and construction. The performances were recorded with various microphone types, then analyzed in MATLAB via custom-made scripts and also algorithms from the MIR toolbox. First, all of the individual strokes were isolated in each performance, and then various acoustic features were calculated. The timing features extracted were onset and offset, or the beginning and end of the strokes' physical signals, and the maximum amplitude peak, which served to further separate each total stroke into attack and decay segments. Finally, for all these stroke segments, we calculated the sound features of duration, which can influence the rhythmic P center of sounds, sound pressure level, which correlates with the perceived loudness of sounds, and spectral centroid, which correlates with the perceived brightness of sounds. To make sense of the captured audio data, two main types of approaches were carried out. One involved conventional statistical tests of difference in means or mediums, and was used to gauge average trends across the entire groups of instrumentalists. This approach gave indications as to the extent to which the average guitarist, bassist, or drummer changed the way they played in the different experimental conditions in terms of both timing and sound features. The other approach involved hierarchical clustering and phylogenetic tree visualizations, and was designed in order to more closely map the diversity of individual strategies used by the musicians. It allowed for a more in-depth overview of the main or archetypical strategies used by the drummers, for example, to express laid-back and push timing styles in terms of inter-instrument onset asynchrony and stroke intensity, amongst other features. So now I will summarize each of the three articles. The first article is titled Effects of Instructed Timing on Electric Guitar and Bass Sound in Groove Performance. This paper analyzed the data from the guitarists and bassists experiments and focused on gauging average timing and sound feature trends across the entire groups. Based on findings from perceptual studies of rhythm and timing, we expected that musicians would shape their sounds, would shape the sounds of their own instruments in ways that might enhance the perceptual salience of intentionally laid or early strokes in the laid back and pushed conditions, and conversely align their strokes with those of the timing reference as closely as possible to create a perceptually synchronous relationships in the on-the-beat conditions. Regarding timing features, we found that on average, compared to the on-the-beat condition, participants produced both the onset and peak of their strokes around 40 milliseconds earlier and later in time in the pushed and laid-back conditions, respectively. These values lie either just beyond or at the very boundaries of heuristic perceptual thresholds of asynchrony detection, but below thresholds of pulse attribution. And this demonstrates the high degree of deliberate timing control that expert musicians can have, where they're able to systematically supply subtle degrees of microrhythmic irregularity to the groove without substantially disturbing the sense of pulse. This is a feat that is much commented on in the ethnographic and popular studies literature, but has not been experimentally demonstrated for guitarists until now, and bassists. We also found that the on-beat strokes for both instruments tended to anticipate those of the metronome, a common effect found in synchronization production studies and termed negative mean asynchrony, or NMA. However, since the average peaks of the on-the-beat strokes were in fact closer to the metronome than to onsets, and not anticipatory usually, this suggests that guitarists and bassists rely upon a timing location closer to the produced sound peak when aiming to synchronize their strokes to reference sounds. That is, they may be aligning the P centers of their strokes rather than onsets to those of the timing reference sounds in such a fashion that they would be heard as falling within the beat bin afforded by the metronome, or that is, the temporal window in which additional sounds would be perceptually subsumed under the same metrical category. So the musicians also used changes in sound features to distinguish between the timing field conditions. Guitarists tended to play laid-back strokes with a slower attack, longer duration, and lower spectral centroid compared to both pushed and on-the-beat strokes. This may have been achieved by a variety of potential techniques, such as sweeping the plectrum on the strings more slowly rather than swiftly striking them, or sliding out the strokes rather than muting them abruptly. Now, this result is in accord with the simple P center interpretation in the sense that these directional changes in sound features would either increase or decrease the distance between the P centers of the guitar sounds relative to those of the external timing reference or an idealized pulse, thus enhancing the perceived early or late asynchronous character of the strokes. That is to say, in order to achieve a laid-back feel, playing strokes with late onset timing in tandem with a slower attack, longer duration, and perhaps darker tone would theoretically shift P centers later in time and enhance perceived asynchronies. Conversely, playing strokes with early onset timing in tandem with a faster attack, shorter duration, and potentially brighter tone would shift P centers early in time and also increase perceived asynchronies for the push strokes. As for the bassist, we found that they mainly utilized intensity, where push strokes were played louder than on the beat and laid back strokes on average. Early and loud strokes would theoretically emphasize asynchronies between bass and timing references, between bass and timing reference or subjective pulse in terms of P centers. However, studies also show that when leading tones in an asynchronous pair are played louder, they tend to mask ensuing lagging tones to a certain extent, thus decreasing the salience of the asynchrony. When playing with an intentional pushed feel, then, bassists might utilize dynamic accentuations to ensure that they are more clearly heard as leading in the ensemble and pushing against the beat, rather than lagging. For a laid-back feel, however, softer strokes would conversely reduce the risk of masking and prevent the bass from being heard as taking the lead, in theory. Overall, this paper's findings lend support to the hypothesis that both temporal and sound-related aspects are important in communicating intended timing feel and performance, where the relative lateness or earliness of sounds may be enhanced or attenuated via strategic timing sound combinations. The second article in the thesis is titled Timing is Everything, or Is It? Effects of Instructed Timing Style, Reference, and Pattern on Drum Kit Sound in Groove-Based Performance. Here the focus was also on average timing sound trends, but those of the drummers, and it investigated the influence of two further musical factors, that of pattern, where drummers played both a simple backbeat groove and a slightly more complex variation, and that of timing reference, where they also played to instrumental backing tracks with guitar-based sounds. In terms of onset timing, all the drummers were able to distinguish between the different feels, and the average difference between laid-back and on-the-beat strokes across all instruments was around 30 milliseconds, and between pushed and on-the-beat strokes, around 40 milliseconds. Once again, this demonstrates a high degree of control in terms of onset placement, whereby drummers are able to create microrhythms at or just above the boundaries of heuristic asynchrony thresholds, but below those for substantially disturbing meter or pulse. Why push strokes displayed greater asynchrony magnitudes may be related to the relatively greater difficulty reported by the drummers compared to playing on the beat and laid-back conditions, but within the context of the experiment. The difference may also be aesthetic or perceptual in nature, in that greater degrees of asynchrony may be considered either more appropriate or more conducive to the perception of a pushed as opposed to a laid-back feel. Now, timing reference was also found to have an effect on onset timing, where less NMA was produced in the backing track. This may be related to the fact that the instrumental reference sounds have slower attacks and longer durations than those of the metronome, which would theoretically afford later P centers and thus invite later synchronization target points. The backing track reference also generally led to more pronounced early and late onset magnitudes compared to the metronome. This may have been the result of drummers ensuring that their intentionally asynchronous sounds were not as readily spectrally or dynamically masked by the longer and harmonically more complex instrumental sounds. Alternatively, the backing track sounds may also have afforded wider subjective beat bends than those of the metronome, thus inviting drummers to further increase asynchrony magnitudes in order to keep their strokes at the very edges of those beat bends. As for sound feature differences, Unlike for the guitarists and bassists in paper one, the results for the drummers were more complex and not in accord with any simple piece center or perceptual studies interpretation. While we found that drummers did use intensity and duration changes in the various drum instruments, they did not do so in a uniform fashion to distinguish either laid-back and push feels from on-the-beat feels. That is to say, laid-back strokes with late onsets were not just combined with longer duration and lower intensity, and push strokes were not only combined with shorter duration and greater intensity, both of which would theoretically enhance perceived asynchronies. For example, if we consider the intensity differences, which were likely more salient than those of duration, according to heuristic thresholds, while snare strokes were played louder in the laid-back condition, hi-hat strokes were played louder in both the laid-back and push conditions. The snare result is in accord with findings from a previous instructed timing study by Danielson and colleagues, who suggested that late and loud combinations might more effectively convey an intentionally produced late asynchrony against the timing reference. Indeed, as mentioned, studies suggest that late and loud sound combinations are more easily perceived as asynchronous, while early and loud combinations tend to be heard as more synchronous due to forward masking effects. Therefore, just as with the case of the bassist in paper one, playing the hi-hat both early and loud in a push context might ensure that the drums are heard as leading rather than following to the benefit of other players in an ensemble situation. Finally, pattern also had some effects where, for example, snare and kick strokes were played louder and hi-hat strokes earlier in pattern two compared to in pattern one. Now, since the main difference between the two patterns was macro-structural in nature, it would appear that the differences could more generally be attributed to the greater complexity and note density in pattern two. Overall, while it appears that onset timing remains the primary vehicle for communicating groove feels in drum kit performance, sound feature differences may be used as a way to further accentuate the off-the-beat character of both early and late strokes and make them stand out more in the total sound texture. The third and final paper is titled Mapping Timing and Intensity Strategies in Drum Kit Performance of a Simple Backbeat Pattern. Excuse me. So here, we once again focused on the data from the drummers. But rather than focus on average trends across the whole group, we explored the diversity of individual strategies used by the different drummers in order to distinguish between timing feels, focusing on the different produced asynchronies between both the drum kit and the beats of the meter, as well as between the drum instruments themselves. We limited the scope of the analysis to the simple backbeat pattern in both timing references, and also to the most salient features of stroke onset and intensity. To provide an overview of the strategies used by the drummers to distinguish laid-back and pushed from on-the-beat performances, we chose to use a hierarchical cluster analysis combined with phylogenetic tree visualizations. Similarity matrices and trees were calculated for each individual performance, allowing us to identify how consistently a given drummer performed strokes earlier or later relative to the grid or another instrument, or softer and louder at various beat locations in the meter. We also computed archetypes to summarize the general characteristics of each cluster by averaging the probabilities of the onset and intensity features, which were then symbolically visualized in the trees and served as a guide for roughly identifying a given drummer's strategy. Regarding the results of the onset feature analysis, while drummers displayed a variety of distinct strategies, we identified roughly three main categories. The first was the general earliness or lateness strategy, where drummers played most, if not all, instruments earlier or later in time relative to the grid, but in synchrony with each other. Whilst highly subjective, we found that these strategies could elicit a rather stark chafing feel. Here's an example from a drummer that applied it in a laid-back performance against the backing track. So the second strategy was that of early or late flam, where drummers played most instruments synchronously with the grid, but at least one instrument was played early or late, and an inter-instrument asynchrony was present between the two drums. So again, we found that these strategies can elicit a concomitant push and pull effect heard against the timing references, where the early or late flam instruments can modulate one's perception of the beats either slightly forwards or backwards in time, in competition with the other more on-the-beat instruments. Here's an example from a drummer playing laid-back against the metronome using this strategy. So the third onset strategy, and perhaps the subtlest, was that of the what we call the ambiguously early or late compound sound. Now these performances encompass those where during a simultaneous kick and hi-hat or snare and hi-hat stroke, one drum instrument was played synchronous with the grid while the other was played early or late. However, unlike in the early or late FLAM strategy, the onset distance between the two instruments was not large enough to be considered asynchronous based on the thresholds that we set. Now here, the ambiguously timed compound strokes can either be heard as quite synchronous events falling firmly on the beat or as just slightly stretching out the beat in an early or late direction, depending on which rhythmic layer one focuses on. Here's a laid-back example against the backing track for you to judge. Now, regarding the intensity strategies, as in paper 2, our analyses showed that drummers did not use greater or lesser intensity uniformly in order to exclusively distinguish either laid-back or pushed from on-the-beat timing feels. However, the most common strategies appeared to be those that consistently applied greater hi-hat or snare intensity rather than kick drum. The role of intensity as a mediator for communicating intended timing feel in drum performances thus once again proved to be less direct than that of onset. Now, this is because in case of laid-back and pushed performances that displayed consistently early or late onset timing profiles, an increase in any given instrument's intensity may both increase its own perceptual salience in the total texture of the performance and enhance or diminish the salience of other instruments' earliness or lateness, depending on the type of chosen onset strategy as well as the timing reference one hears it against. On the other hand, in the few instances of pushed and laid-back performances where drummers did not utilize any consistent onset strategy, most of them did in fact consistently manipulate intensity features, which again may accentuate perhaps latent offbeat tendencies present in those performances. Overall, we found that the methodological approach that we chose was quite useful for navigating through and mapping out the diversity of performance timing sound strategies in our large data set, and that it corresponded to a decent extent with our own subjective close listening of selected examples. So to summarize, here are a few general conclusions. In order to distinguish preconceived laid-back, on-the-beat, and pushed microrhythmic feels from one another in simple groove-based context, skilled musicians are able to control the timing of their rhythmic events to a high degree, as well as systematically manipulate sound features related to duration, intensity, and brightness. In addition to demonstrating average group tendencies, a diversity of nuanced timing sound strategies can be found at the individual participant level. Now, as usual, context matters. Timing sound strategies appear to be limited in part to the range of manipulable features afforded by an instrument's design and construction. External timing references can also influence performance, where short and sharp metronomic sound references tend to lead to greater NMA than instrumental references with longer and wider sounds, and the type of pattern instructed can also further affect strategies. Finally, although the magnitudes of timing asynchronies in performance can be quite subtle, timing and sound, often verging on the thresholds of perceptual discriminability, it is possible that they may be enhanced or attenuated by musicians when they are concomitantly manipulate sound features together with timing features. So I also like to add a few thoughts concerning the limitations of the thesis. So while the statistical tests suggest that a variety of timing and sound feature differences are systematically achieved in terms of objectively measured physical signals, the actual perceptual effects that they will have on listener still need to be investigated more directly. In this thesis, I've mentioned, I used available heuristic psychoacoustic thresholds derived from simple listening experiments, which again can, at best, can only provide clues as to how noticeable timing and sound differences may be to the average listener. Ultimately, how microrhythmic performance nuances are in fact perceived by listeners will vary greatly, depending not only on physical and sound factors, but on subjective ones, such as familiarity with the aesthetic norms of a given genre, personal taste, degree of rhythmic acuity, amongst other factors. Regarding the experiments, although we strove to design them to be as ecologically valid as possible without sacrificing too much control over the variables, it remains the case that the musicians perform in a somewhat artificial laboratory setting. One which most reported to resemble a commercial studio recording session, however. And most participants reported feeling comfortable during these experiments. But even so, one should be cautious when generalizing our results to real world musical performance situations. This is especially the case when there are so many genres and instrumental contexts in which the simple groove patterns we used here are applicable. As such, the various timing sound strategies we observed in our experiments can also only provide clues as to how musicians would actually approach the production of microrhythmic feels in real contexts. To summarize, findings from this thesis papers provide further evidence that the production of timing in groove-based music involves more than simple onset manipulations and suggests that durational, dynamic, and frequency-related features may also play a role in how microrhythm is communicated in performance. As such, in music, perhaps timing isn't everything, but rather it is timing and sound that is the case. Thanks so much for listening. That concludes my presentation.